I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Tonight, I'm starting a four-month series on cancer with survivors and experts to offer you both the latest in traditional and complementary care and some alternative approaches that have been proven successful in the past. There has been much progress recently in cancer treatment, with new discoveries almost daily that it is hard to keep up. In addition, it is the second cause of death in the United States and touches most families. Thus, spending time on this subject seemed warranted. My goal is to provide information to those facing a diagnosis of cancer who must make a decision about care. Because nutrition is such an important part of daily life and of cancer prevention and treatment, it seemed appropriate to start with this aspect of cancer care. And one of the most knowledgeable and important people in nutrition and cancer is my first guest, Dr. Patrick Quillen, who is an internationally recognized expert. He has 27 years' experience as a clinical nutritionist, of which 10 were spent as Vice President of Nutrition for the Cancer Treatment Center of America, where he worked with thousands of patients in the hospital setting. He has appeared on over 40 television and 220 radio shows nationally and is a regular speaker for medical and trade conventions. He has been a consultant to the National Institute of Health and the Department of Agriculture, among many other organizations. His 15 books have sold over 1 million copies and includes his bestsellers, Healing Nutrients and Beating Cancer with Nutrition. More information is available at www.patrickquillen.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Patrick, and I look forward to learning more about nutrition and cancer.
Excellent.
Thank you. Can you tell me, Patrick, the reasons for using nutrition as part of a comprehensive cancer treatment?
Well, there's basically five very good reasons why nutrition should be part of everyone's comprehensive cancer treatment program. Number one, 40% of cancer patients actually die of malnutrition. Cancer is a wasting disease. Oftentimes it causes a loss of appetite. It can change metabolism, digestion, and so one must aggressively address the notion of malnutrition in cancer patients. Number two, we know that chemo and radiation can kill cancer cells, but they can also kill the patient. These are general cytotoxic agents. They kill everything in their path. And yet we find that with good nutrition, that's diet and supplements, you can make chemo and radiation more of selective toxins, meaning you go in with a machine gun and you're killing bad guys, not just everybody at the airport. So nutrition makes chemo and radiation more therapeutic against the cancer and less damaging to the patient. Number three, the immune system is how most of us are protected against cancer. It's our army, the police that patrols through the body looking for cancer cells and infectious organisms. And if the immune system is working right, we don't get cancer. And so a big part of nutrition in cancer is to get that immune system working properly so it will recognize the inevitable remaining cancer cells after we get that good news from the doctor who says, we think we got it all. Well, now it's when your body has to pick up the slack and finish the job. So the immune system is driven by nutrition. Number four, sugar feeds cancer. We know that cancer is an obligate glucose metabolizer, meaning it prefers glucose as its fuel, and that if we can lower the amount of glucose in the gut, the stomach, and the blood, we find that we can slow down cancer. There's good studies in animals and humans to show that a high sugar diet actually accelerates cancer incidence and growth, and so diet can help there. And number five, lastly, nutrients become biological response modifiers. That is, they change the way the body works. And to give you a blatant example of this, Carl, every year in America, about 30 young men die of heat stroke in late summer, early fall. What you have is big men working out in football practice in hot days. They're not drinking enough water, And the problem is heat stroke, and it's lethal, and the only cure is water.
Mm-hmm.
And so water becomes a biological response modifier there. The mm-hmm. same happens in cancer patients. For instance, many a patient is blatantly deficient in fish oil, or EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid. Giving fish oil becomes something like giving water to that football player who's mm-hmm. dying on the turf.
Mm-hmm.
So there are nutrients that can prop up the body, change the way it works, and help the body to regulate itself. Because
mm-hmm.
a very important soundbite for our listeners is, a healthy human body is self-regulating and self-repairing. That means that our body can find and fix and destroy small amounts of cancer cells if you're nourishing it properly.
Mm-hmm. Well then, Patrick, what are some foods that will help prevent or reverse cancer?
At the very top of the list, Carl, are
mm-hmm.
colorful fruits and vegetables. The most commonly eaten vegetables in America are ketchup, French fries, and onion rings. And I'm not being sarcastic.
Right.
That's actually a fact.
Right.
And we realize that on any given day, the vast majority of Americans do not eat fresh fruit, indoles, meaning things like cabbage and broccoli. So here is a very important soundbite. I'd like our listeners to think of eating as much fresh fruit and vegetables, colorful
mm-hmm.
fruits and vegetables, as their colon will tolerate. So we're talking about color. That means red grapes are better than white grapes. That means sweet potatoes, as in yams, are better than white potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the more color you can get, cantaloupe, its rich orange color is probably better than honeydew melon.
Mm-hmm.
So go for the color in your fruits and vegetables, and if you can't eat it, drink it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting point. A lot of Americans just say, well, I'm too busy, or I don't want to chew that stuff. Well, then throw it into a high-speed blender and puree it.
Mm-hmm.
I have found I can make drinks out of this stuff and get down my 5 servings a day. There's now over 200 good studies showing that a diet rich in fruits and vegetables dramatically lowers the incidence of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, in working with thousands of cancer patients, in my 17 years of work with clinical cancer,
mm-hmm.
I found most of the patients, their diet was meat, potatoes, and gravy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Americans could eat more fresh fruit and vegetables, we would lower cancer incidence from the current level of 1.5 million newly diagnosed cases per year down to probably a third or less.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, there are many other things people can do nutritionally. I would talk about more fiber. I find that many of the patients I have worked with have had chronic constipation, and that a very important part of the body is the gut.
Mm-hmm.
40% of the immune system surrounds the gut. And so when we have constipation, there are toxic debris that builds up in the gut, and it's being fermented by microorganisms, which then give off carcinogenic or cancer-causing byproducts. So get your gut moving. Have regular daily bowel movements. And
mm-hmm.
in doing that, you have to add fiber and water to the diet. General plant food, what I suggest, I know that we have limited time here, but I ask my patients to look at your meal plate and cut it up into 3 equal pie-shaped sections. Let's just say that you're looking at a pie and you cut it into 3 equal pie-shaped sections. Think of that as your dinner plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like you to cover the first one-third of your plate with lean and clean protein food. Chicken, fish, eggs, yogurt, very lean meat. I prefer grass-fed beef, turkey. There's ways of getting protein in you that is clean, meaning it is lower in the antibiotics, growth hormone, stuff that's in commercial meat, as well as lean, low in fat. The next one-third of your plate should be covered with cooked, wholesome plant food. And that means steamed vegetables, all oatmeal, whole grain pastas, whole grain breads. This is nuts. This is grains, legumes, beans. The black beans is a very good food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the next one-third. And then the last one-third of your plate would be covered with fresh, raw, colorful fruits and vegetables. Spinach, carrots, cantaloupe, oranges, watermelon, the list goes on, colorful fruits and vegetables. And with that meal pattern, we would cut cancer incidence probably by two-thirds.
Mm-hmm. That's not an easy order to get people to change their eating habits, I'm sure.
Well, it is not. And if this was all just basic science and you tell people to do something and they do it, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I find, Carl, that it's not until the person hears the word, you've got cancer, that suddenly they get interested in their lifestyle and their health. Suddenly they say, well, you know, maybe I need to get serious about this. But at that point, you still have the oncologist oftentimes telling the patient, eat whatever you want. Nutrition has no impact on your cancer. And for God's sake, don't take any supplements. This is the standard soundbite from the 10,000 board-certified oncologists in America.
Right.
And unfortunately, that is inaccurate, outdated information.
Right.
So
right.
the patient typically will follow this pathway, and in roughly 50% of the cancer patients, they are then told, get your affairs in order, and then they come to someone like me or you, and they want to get serious about nutrition. And I would implore our listeners, get serious about nutrition before you hear those words.
Right.
Get your affairs in order.
Right, right. Patrick, what are some problems that cancer patients experience, and how would nutrition help with those problems?
Let's talk about the typical cancer patient who is going through oncology care, meaning they're having chemo, radiation, and surgery. And if we think of that 1.5 million newly diagnosed cancer patients per year, in the chute, in the system right now, are about 4 million cancer patients being treated today in America, and another 4 million who are recently in remission, hopefully not to have a recurrence, but possible. So we add all that up, there's at least 8 million people for whom this message is very important. Common symptoms they would experience. The side effects of chemo are nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Nausea, vomiting, fatigue, hair loss, weight loss. Among the most common symptoms from these cytotoxic therapies, what chemo is doing is it's killing rapidly growing cells.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the oncologist hopes is that they can kill more cancer cells than healthy cells, but they know what is called collateral damage,
mm-hmm.
meaning you're killing some of your own cells, and it's the most rapidly growing cells. And so you think about that. Well, that's the lining of the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose your taste buds and your appetite. It's the lining of the gut. So you lose your ability to digest and assimilate food. You have very poor absorption. It's also red blood cells, which means you get anemic, and so now you have no energy. It's also white blood cells, which means now you have lost your resistance to infections. So they tell people, don't touch the phone, don't hug your kids, which I think, again, is barbaric.
Right.
So these are some of the common side effects. Some of the platinum drugs, cisplatinum, oxaloplatinum, the side effects are neuropathy, which means a tingling numbness and pain in the extremities. It starts with a tingling in your fingertips, as if your fingertips are going to sleep. And then it turns into pain, which sometimes has to be medicated with narcotics. These are all common side effects. If you're getting radiation, common radiation to the pelvic region or the hips region for, let's say, uterine cancer, prostate, colon cancer. Common side effects include diarrhea, constipation, because you're radiating the gut, where
mm-hmm.
the body is trying to eliminate and digest food. And many other side effects, but number one, numero uno here, is malnutrition. 40% of cancer patients die of malnutrition, and towards that effect, my book talks about the Dragon Slayer Shake, which I've found. I've had hundreds of people unsolicited email, call me, and say, this saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
What I would suggest people, you just got back from chemo, you feel really tired, you've lost 30 pounds in the last month, the doctor says you need to put some weight on, you don't feel like eating, you're nauseous. I talk about the Dragon Slayer. Here's what you do. You take a handful or roughly a half a cup of fresh, raw, peeled carrots,
mm-hmm.
put them in a high-speed blender with a small amount of Welch's grape juice. So it's 100% pure Welch's grape juice.
Mm-hmm.
Puree this until it's a fine mix. Then add in some powdered protein from whey,
mm-hmm.
soy, rice, egg white. There's a dozen different powdered proteins you can buy at your health food store. Then add in a half of a frozen banana.
Mm-hmm.
And what this does when you puree it is it has the taste, texture, and consistency of something like a McDonald's milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold, it's smooth, it's thick, and cancer patients can get this down even when they don't feel like eating.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of a life raft to get you through the troubled periods when you're going through chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. What would be your three top guidelines for optimum nutrition?
Well, I guess there's diet and there's supplements, and it would be nice if we all lived like Robinson Crusoe, if we lived on a desert island where it was semi-tropical and we ate our own plants and animals that we grew and everything was organic and clean, and we exercised all of that clean food into a lean, toned, fit body, and we lived outside and got adequate sunshine and vitamin D, and life was wonderful. We're Robinson Crusoe. But in fact, in America, that's not the case, which is why supplements can become of value. But I'll start with diet. I mentioned colorful fruits and vegetables, adequate amounts of lean and clean protein. Make sure that your diet is plant-based, meaning about 90%, 80 to 90% of the calories should come from plant food. And that's fruits, vegetables, grains, legumes, nuts, seeds. Those are plant foods, and there's many cancer protective agents in those. So the diet should also be relatively low in fat, low glycemic index. That means the food should not be triggering a large amount of sugar into the bloodstream. So that's a basic on diet. Make sure you're getting adequate water. Many Americans are chronically dehydrated, and water is the number two most essential nutrient in the human body after oxygen. 5 minutes without oxygen, you're dead. 2 days without water, you're dead. The other nutrients in the diet start going down in relative levels of importance. And then we move into supplements. I think that most Americans are chronically and blatantly deficient in omega-3 fats. I'm talking about fish oil. Flax oil is acceptable, but fish oil is critical. There are many other useful fats, such as GLA, gamma-linolenic acid, which is an anti-inflammatory fat that's found in borage and primrose oil. And it used to be in our diet, Carl, back in the days when our animals, goats, chicken, cows, buffalo, when our animals would graze on wild grass, the meat would have a rich mixture of these fats in them. Now we have artificially fed commercial meat that does not have the same kind of fat in it, like conjugated linoleic acid. So there are useful fats that can be taken as supplements. There are supplements like vitamin D that even the government is agreeing maybe everyone is chronically deficient. Vitamin D is something that we make in the skin from the action of sunlight, and that the original recommended dietary allowance, RDA, was 400 IU per day. We now find that to be ridiculously low. And then, in fact, if you go to the beach on a summer's day in a bathing suit, your body will make 10,000 IU of vitamin D per day gladly, and then it will turn off its mechanism. So those are more optimal levels. Supplements of vitamin D for many people who live in cloudy climates is probably a good idea. Minerals. We used to add minerals back to the soil in the form of compost. You'd take manure and compost and spread it over the fields, and minerals were put back into the soil. In agribusiness in America, we put NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium on the soil, no minerals. And so imagine if you had been taking withdrawals from your bank account for the last 60 years. What do you have left? Answer is not much. So the soil is depleted of trace minerals like selenium, chromium, zinc, magnesium, sulfur, and other minerals that are not added back to the soil. So those minerals in supplement form can be of benefit. Anyway, the long and short of it is we are at the threshold of a healthcare meltdown in this country. Cost, inconvenience, dramatic invasive medicine is not meeting our needs, and that the public needs to know that you can take major steps to protect yourself, to prevent diseases, and delay the onset of diseases. And part of it's nutrition.
Patrick, I noticed the similarity between the diet that you recommend for cancer, the diet that Edgar Cayce recommended for an acid-alkaline balance toward the alkaline side, and the anti-inflammatory diet. Is there a connection between all of these and cancer?
Yes. In my humble opinion, I think what happens in many people is that think of non-specific host defense mechanisms. How does your body work? How does it stay well? We are all surrounded by billions of bacteria, fungus, virus, parasites. And so our ongoing process every day is to stay healthy enough that these pathogens do not want to take over and finish off our body.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, the diet is supposed to generate a certain amount of vitality.
Mm-hmm.
Underline and put that in bold letters, vitality. So the diet, lifestyle, stress reduction, meditation, exercise, toxin avoidance, energy alignment, which pays homage to chiropractic and osteopathic manipulation of the body,
mm-hmm.
all of those comprise your body's vitality. And with that, we're able to avoid the invasion of these pathogens.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had time, we would talk about, is cancer an infection? There's some evidence that it is. And so once that infection takes over inside the cell, it starts generating acids so that we know cancer is a obligate glucose metabolizer, meaning it eats a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It also generates an acid environment. And so the diet that I'm recommending, that Edgar Cayce,
mm-hmm.
that many other health experts recommend,
mm-hmm.
is attempting to provide the body with decent pH.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking for is roughly 7.4
mm-hmm.
pH in the arteries.
Mm-hmm.
So not talking about saliva, stools, urine, any of that. In the body, 7.4, slightly alkaline, is a healthy
mm-hmm.
pH. And
mm-hmm.
the diet helps to drive that. So fruits, vegetables are generating somewhat of an alkaline environment,
mm-hmm.
but you can overdo that also. Protein provides acids from amino acids, and so you're trying to modify that so it's dramatically toward, you don't want it dramatically either direction. You want it slightly alkaline, which is why I said plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that doctors are beginning to accept the cancer protocols in cancer treatment?
Well, it's been a slow battle, quite frankly. Carl, in 1975, I went back to college to study nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
I finished my bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees and got out in 1981 with this wide-eyed, naive innocence that I was going to teach Americans how to eat properly to prevent disease.
Right.
Nobody was interested.
Right.
Time marches on. I taught college and did other things. In 1989, I started working with a large cancer hospital. Nationwide network of Joint Commission approved cancer hospitals. And there was that myopia or a misunderstanding among the oncologists that they thought nutrition has nothing to do with cancer. That was 1989. Well, I thought this is a minor misunderstanding. These are bright people. Surely we can bring them over to good science.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we are 20 years later, and I'm afraid the vast majority, I'm talking at least 90%, of the 10,000 board-certified oncologists in this country still labor under those same misconceptions as 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So are we making progress? Possibly, but it's way too slow in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that it's going to be consumer-driven.
Yes. Yes, and actually what it's going to be is crisis-driven, unfortunately.
Right.
We are at the edge of a healthcare meltdown. We have, by various definitions or creative bookkeeping, we're somewhere between a $60 trillion and $100 trillion in unsecured liabilities for Medicare, Medicaid, and those are our health care legacy costs.
Mm-hmm.
General Motors is on the edge of collapse. Maybe they've already done it. Chrysler, same thing, because of their health care costs.
Mm-hmm.
This country is going to do the same thing at
mm-hmm.
the rate we're going, and maybe this transition from our current cancer treatment situation to a more rational cancer treatment will require a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any other way of doing it.
Right. And I'm optimistic about this, Patrick.
I am too. I see good things ahead.
Right.
But it's unfortunate that the status quo is not willing to embrace other ideas that are more successful. For instance,
right.
Carl, there have been studies showing clearly that the most ineffective form of allopathic medicine in America
mm-hmm.
is cancer treatment. Studies have looked at the efficacy of drugs. At the top of the list, the most effective drugs are analgesics, pain medication. And in my humble opinion, the physician treats the cancer patient with all of their Hippocratic oath
mm-hmm.
when they are using appropriate pain medication. And I have seen too many cancer patients where the doctor would give chemotherapy with reckless abandon,
mm-hmm.
and this stuff is very toxic, and
right.
there's questionable benefits. But when it came time for the end of life and the patient is in chronic, exquisite pain, the doctor would not give narcotics. I find that unscientific. Anyway,
right.
If we look at all drugs in America and realize that's a $250 billion a year business, of all those drugs, the most effective are analgesics, pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
And the least effective are chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would hope that our friends in the oncology community would realize that, all right, well, maybe our stuff isn't working that well. We need to bring you people into the room, and let's try and come up with better results in our patients by embracing comprehensive cancer treatment.
Right.
So my message is not to say that chemo and radiation are completely useless. It is to say that the side effects are horrific,
mm-hmm.
and the benefits are questionable. However, when combined with nutrition, there is a synergism there in which nutrition makes these therapies possibly scientifically rationalized.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some last thoughts, Patrick, before we talk about your book and how people can reach you?
Well, I would hope that your message of health in general, Carl, would be broadcast and embraced by the public. But as you said, this is going to be a consumer-driven trend.
Right.
There's enough patients now going to their doctors saying, well, what about nutrition? And the doctor oftentimes will react violently or sarcastically. Well, then the patient finds someone who isn't quite as violent and sarcastic and is a little bit more informed on the subject. So this is a consumer-driven trend,
right.
But it's going slowly. And I think the way it will accelerate its change is as people back away and say, you know, call my insurance company. They said they wouldn't pay for it. Here's what's bizarre. Insurance will pay $2,000, $3,000 a day to put a cancer patient in intensive care.
Right.
But they won't pay $100 a day for nutrition help to keep them out of intensive
right.
care.
Right.
That makes no sense financially or scientifically. So when the consumer calls their health insurance company and said, you know, you people don't pay for the stuff that I want, so I'm just canceling my coverage. And then the insurance company thinks, well, those were one of the few people who didn't use services. We need their income. Maybe we better start doing what the customer wants.
Right, right. Now, Patrick, can you tell us about your book and any other products you have and how the listeners can reach you?
My book, Beating Cancer with Nutrition, has been out now for 14 years. It's in its fifth edition. It's sold almost 400,000 copies. It's in three foreign languages. It's available on Amazon, all bookstores, health food stores. You can go to nutritioncancer.com for more information from me. There are some free downloads you can get at nutritioncancer.com. You can find more about me at patrickquillen.com. I have other products, but essentially my hope is that people will get my book, Beating Cancer with Nutrition. If you're too tired or too sick to read, then there is an audio CD in the back of the book.
Oh.
It's 74 minutes long. You say, you know, I can't read, but I'm laying in bed a lot. Well, put the CD in the
mm-hmm.
stereo by your bed and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get the general ideas that are in the book. And from that, I have found tens of thousands of people who have said this made a big difference in our lives. It doesn't cure everybody's cancer. It depends
mm-hmm.
on how late in the intervention process you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I am hoping that enough people are listening and enough people are in good health or salvageable health that they will embrace the message in Beating Cancer with Nutrition that your body wants to be well. It has the innate wisdom to heal itself from some of the most extreme conditions, but only if you feed your body good nutrients,
mm-hmm.
if you feed your mind and spirit good thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and if you think of your whole self as a garden, it takes about 2 or 3 months to go from a barren ground to a fertile, good-looking garden.
Right.
And that's how long it's going to take to turn around many people in America to where they start feeling better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you very much, Patrick, and I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
My pleasure, Carl. Best wishes for your efforts at spreading the good news that cancer is not as inevitable as death and taxes.
Right.
There's something you
right.
can do to prevent it and better treat it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
My second guest is Dr. Gene Franklin, a holistic nutritionist in private practice in Williamsville, New York, for the past 15 years. She assists people of all ages to regain their physical, emotional well-being
by using natural modalities. In addition to her doctorate in holistic nutrition, she is an ordained minister, a certified iridologist, a Reiki II graduate, and is certified in energy medicine. She also teaches holistic nutrition and holistic health at Canonesus College in New York and has taught women's issues, international health, and complementary and alternative health. Although this discussion is not specific to cancer, it reinforces the importance of good nutrition as a foundation for health. I welcome you, Jean, to the Holistic Health Show. First, I would like to ask you why you studied for your doctorate in holistic nutrition.
Well, my whole life I vacillated between it's all spiritual and mental.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, there's an awful lot of physical out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see people who were struggling to find, why is this happening to me and it's not healing? And then they'd go and get some beta carotene or something. Oh, wow, that took care of that. So I knew that there is two levels to be addressed. And if you ignore either one, you're not going to be very successful. And just going around trying to find what is the best avenue for getting that information led me to getting my doctorate.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. And is there any particular style of eating that you prefer, such as low-fat, high-carb, high-protein, low-carb, vegetarian, or
no, something? And I think that those approaches are very confusing to people and probably put them in a state of trauma at this time of year when people are trying to get healthier. They go to the store and they go, what should I eat?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good question,
mm-hmm.
but the question has to be answered by the individual, not by some
mm-hmm.
article that they've read or the current trendy diet that's out there. A lot of people will do good with low-carb, high-protein.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do good with high-carb. A lot of people do best balancing it. And biochemical individuality is a cornerstone of my practice,
mm-hmm.
and I have found that it is extremely true. There's tests out there that you can take. I know that there's a book called The Metabolic Typing Diet by Wolcott and Fahey that has an over 90 questions
mm-hmm.
to help you determine what type is correct for you. Mercola.com has got such a test.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I do think that people need to learn to get in touch with their own gut
mm-hmm.
and stand in front of the food and with a basic understanding of what really leads to a healthy body, which is whole, natural food, not denatured food, figure out at any given moment what it is that you need.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned denatured food, I think that there is so much bad food out there, and I've gotten so I don't really completely trust the government to protect my food supply.
Yeah, I wouldn't. When they allow irradiated food.
Right, and the genetically engineered food.
And
it's a crime that the American public do not know what is genetically engineered and what isn't.
And the fact that it's not been studied, and
right.
it is totally unscientific to unleash it on the public.
Right. So I try to stay in my own life with organic food as much as possible. And there may be problems with that that you could tell us about, I don't know, but I believe that it probably has less pesticides and is probably less liable to be genetically engineered. And
well, it can't be genetically engineered if it's certified organic,
mm-hmm.
according to the Organic Certification Act. So organic is always a very safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond organic, though, a lot of people don't want to pay the price for it, and in
mm-hmm.
many instances, as a lot of the farmers around the country are picking up on the fact that the marketplace demands cleaner, healthier food supply,
mm-hmm.
they are themselves offering the information, this is not genetically modified, it may not be certified organic, but we do our best to grow it organically.
Mm-hmm.
There is something called IPM, Integrated Pest Management.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's taught at Cornell, and I'm very fortunate where I am. A lot of people go to Cornell Cooperative Extension, and they get certified in this. And that means your food is locally grown using minimum or zero pesticides, even
mm-hmm.
if it's not certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're shipped, there's not much distance in shipping. It'll be hauled out of the field in the morning, and it'll be in your produce market by that afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And how is that labeled?
Pardon?
Again, Jean, how is that labeled?
Well, IPM. They don't usually call it IPM in there, but if you ask your supermarket, the manager of the produce section should be able to tell you what things are grown with integrated pest management.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay. And this way you get a lot more nutrients from your food because from the moment the food is cut, if you can get great organic lettuce when it's cut in California, but by the time it's shipped to Western New York where I live, it's been sitting around a while, and every day it's losing nutrients.
Oh, right, right.
So it's a balancing act, but I will say that it's a very much a growing movement, the community-supported agriculture, organic farms, and people trying to achieve that no-pesticide level. Is definitely a growing movement, and I find that very heartening.
Right.
Read more and more articles, and I know that the industry itself, if you want to call it an industry, is growing by leaps and bounds.
Then I also try to stay away from, as much as possible, the large fish and the smaller fish too frequently. So I may eat fish once or twice a week, but other than that, I stay away from it. And also I stay away from farm-grown salmon, because of the toxins. And again, I don't know if the public are aware of some of these things that are not as healthy as they should be.
Yeah, unfortunately, I understand the FDA is rescinding its warning on fish also, and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is at odds with them currently because they did issue a statement years ago limiting the amount of tuna and mackerel and salmon and fatty fish that people should eat. And there are reasons for that. There were studies done that showed, if nothing else, premature delivery in women if they ate this stuff. And now the FDA is doing a little backpedaling. So people should be aware of the fact that it is dangerous. There are people now, I understand, who are farming fish and salmon, and they're doing it, it's their version of organically. It's just started, I think, in the last couple of years, and I don't know much about it. I keep putting out feelers for the information.
Right.
But you're right. For right now, the farmed stuff, I know that there have been class action suits against it. They were at one point putting dye in the fish because the flesh of those fish being fed things that they would never eat in nature was resulting in a totally different product. And people have to understand that when they eat farmed foods, they're not getting the same quality. It's actually the same with beef and all other factory farmed animals, chickens that are factory farmed. When they're raised in a manner that is not natural to them and they are fed things that are not natural to them, then they're usually given drugs or something else to help them to digest and grow to become something to send to market. What goes to market and goes in your body is not the same substance as the ones that are grown naturally.
I try to stay away from beef pretty much. If I'm at someone's home and they serve it, I'll eat it. But otherwise, I don't cook it at home and I don't order it in a restaurant.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons beef was given such a bad rap is because it became factory farmed and the substance itself in which you're eating is not of the same quality and doesn't have the same nutrients and the same balance as grass-fed beef. Grass-fed beef is very good for you. It has a lot of something called conjugated linoleic acid. There's all sorts of things in it that are good for you, but it's hard to come by. Well, it's getting easier now, but the factory-farmed beef, actually the result in your product, the metabolic byproducts, are just not the same. They're more detrimental to your health. And I'm with you. When I'm out at a restaurant, unless it says organic grass-fed beef, I never order meat.
Let me ask you about supplements. Many of us in holistic health use supplements, and I'm wondering what your thinking as a holistic nutritionist is about supplements, and do you recommend them to your clients?
I invariably do recommend them to my clients. That said, I wish I didn't have to. The only reason I do is because I know from my studies that as this country was settled, we used up the soil. The farming practices in this country from the very beginning have not been the equivalent of the Indians or sustainable farmers who could use the same land for centuries and knew how to put back the nutrients. Consequently, you could follow the evolution of cardiovascular disease across the country and the fertility of animals, things like that, it's statistically coinciding with the depletion of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, even if you're eating a good diet, most people need to supplement with something. I try to stay with whole food supplements. If you're going to get a vitamin E, get all four tocopherols. Try to have it with the tocotrienols as close to nature as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I used to recommend cod liver oil for vitamin A and D. Now I understand that's become a controversy because it is not the same cod liver oil that studies were done back in 1930s with. So it's mostly D that you need.
Mm-hmm.
People need these things, and it's found that when they're in their diet, especially vitamin D, that's a great example, that it reduces inflammation, and when you reduce inflammation, you're reducing something that contributes to a great many degenerative diseases like cancer, arthritis, things like that. The best is, of course, getting food that's grown on nutrient-dense soils and has got high degrees of nutrients in it, high
mm-hmm.
levels of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
I read something a few years ago that the bowl of spinach your grandmother might have given you in 1950, it would take something like 60 bowls today to get
wow.
the same amount of minerals.
Oh.
So that's a phenomenal difference.
Something you said triggered a question, too, and that has to do with the acid-alkaline balance in the body. And back in the 30s, Casey had talked about how important this was in terms of preventing colds and all. And I read that more recently they're finding that yeast and cancer and a whole variety of illnesses thrive in an acid-balanced body. As a holistic nutritionist, do you do anything with your clients as far as the acid-alkaline base?
I do, but the approach to it is not the conventional one, even in the naturopathic community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, if I can briefly tell you the story of biochemical individuality,
mm-hmm.
that book was written by Roger Williams back in the 50s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because, and I will get to the point of the pH.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But let me just preface this by saying that pH is determined by your biochemical individuality combined with what you choose to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the little story I'm going to tell you here is one that's in the metabolic typing diet,
mm-hmm.
which was a follow-up sort of to Roger Williams, where the gentleman talks about how his mother was a Seventh-day Adventist and a vegetarian, and when he got desperately ill, I believe he had pancreatic cancer or something, that she took him off all of his junk food and fed him a vegetarian diet, and he recovered.
Mm-hmm.
He built a whole practice mm-hmm. on this and on health, et cetera. And his wife got sick about 10 years later, I think it was, from an overexposure to toxic paint fumes or something. So he tried the same thing with her,
mm-hmm.
vegetarian broths, vegetables, and she just got worse and worse. So out of desperation, he tried the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
He gave her meat and beef broth, and she got better. And I love that story because it just epitomizes.
Right.
Many people say, oh, you want to alkalize, you got to have vegetables, you
mm-hmm.
got to do your
mm-hmm.
carrot juice
mm-hmm.
and do this and that. And I learned the hard way with experience with people. Some people would say, oh, my God, I can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
I was up all night, or I feel jittery, I don't feel good. And their pH would not alter that much.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are much more carnivorous than others. And if you take a look around the world, there have been many, many healthy cultures.
Mm-hmm.
The Inuit, who lived off of very few vegetables and a great deal of protein and high fat,
mm-hmm.
and they were very, very healthy, had great teeth, strong bones before they were exposed to our culture's food.
Right.
And then you have people in the tropics who are naturally tend to be vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Or fruitivores,
mm-hmm.
and they do well. So what I do, again, is I always go back to biochemical individuality, and if a person is highly acidic, if their pH, I do have the little pH sticks
mm-hmm.
in the saliva,
mm-hmm.
and if we're not resolving it, I'll keep testing that.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make a difference, but the foods that are going to get your pH in the proper range are not necessarily the foods that are going to do it for your neighbor.
Oh. Well, you know, it's interesting, Jean, because when I had lung cancer 32 years ago, I was on a diet that was 75% raw fruit and vegetables and no protein, no dairy, grains I could have. It was primarily fruit, vegetables, and grains. And it was hard to follow, but I did. I think that it had an impact, but I don't think it was the only thing because I used a holistic approach.
Well, I've got to say that I think the distinction needs to be made. When someone has cancer or they're desperately ill, then you go into what would be a therapeutic diet mode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And raw foods are extremely cleansing. I advocate to all my clients, regardless of what your bent is, if it's towards meats or vegetable, everybody needs some vegetable or source of mineral and protein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily protein. When you go off of protein, you're giving your body a rest.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain conditions where the body needs that. People used to fast. That used to be a time-honored tradition in just about every culture.
Mm-hmm.
That when you're sick or even just a few times a year, give your body a rest from digesting food.
Mm-hmm.
So the raw food I definitely endorse with people, especially, I live in the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
and especially in the spring when you have access to those things. They're very cleansing to the cells, they're very soothing, and they will help the body to realign itself.
Mm-hmm.
The body is self-healing, and if you give it a break and just give it basically what it needs and you don't give it things that hurt, that it in particular is sensitive to, it usually will heal itself.
Mm-hmm. I did find after a while that I was having symptoms of protein deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So I did take a predigested protein, and that seemed to resolve the protein deficiency problem.
I will say that it's my experience that your body will talk to you.
Right,
and when you're doing a cleansing, healing, diet, therapeutic diet like that, you'll know when you're done.
Right, right. Gene, obesity is fast becoming the number one preventable health problem in the country, overtaking smoking. And what would be the most important change that the average person in the United States should make in terms of their diet if they're tending toward obesity?
Well, the very first thing that comes to mind is quitting sugar. Refined white sugar is ingested in this country unbelievable amounts, and it is statistically coincident with the obesity problem. That said, and by the way, a great book on this is William Duffy's Sugar Blues. It actually is a great read. The man writes very entertainingly and just gives you so much information about what sugar does to you.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a controlled substance. The only other thing is, again, to eat according to your type. Find out what your body type is, what foods your body does best on.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can eat grains. I discuss this with other practitioners, and I read various people. I know Elson Haas had a book out about the false fat diet, or maybe I'm confusing my authors on that. That might have been someone else. But when you eat things that are not appropriate to your type, your body tends to swell. It tends to develop a lot of fat, water, and mucus, and it goes way out of balance. If you can then detect and eliminate the things that you're eating that are not appropriate for your body type, like if you're eating a lot of bread and you just eliminate that, you should see a remarkable difference.
Mm-hmm.
Same with dairy. I think Elson Haas is the one who wrote The Sensitive Seven. Let me see if I can remember them. They're wheat, corn, dairy, sugar, soy, citrus, and sugar. Was that seven?
I think so, right.
Yeah, and those are statistically the top seven things for people to look at. Find out what your body does best on. And, you know, you mentioned before there's other things besides the physical.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think you have to tune into, use your imagination if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be like to be in perfect physical condition?
Mm-hmm.
And then hold that goal every day. Maybe spend a little time meditating on that and see what comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you find that you might be led more to exercise more, to do the things that will get your body back in balance again.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to fix a meal, you might find you're drawn more towards that raw red green pepper than you are towards the peppermint ice cream. For some reason, you just go, I don't know what's wrong with me today, but I'm eating my vegetables. I've seen it happen many times. It's happened for myself, and I really think that the obesity thing is we get sold a lot of foods that are just garbage to our body.
Right, right, definitely.
Yeah, and we've got to take over health. We've got to recognize that there is a connection between our lifestyle and our diet and the condition our bodies are in, and we don't need another drug or pill to then change that. We simply need to find out what it is we're doing that's creating the situation, knock it off, and start doing what's right for us.
But how do we do that, Jean? I think the American public are so used to just popping a pill that they think it's going to take care of everything, that they don't want to invest in what it takes to make some of these major lifestyle changes. How do you work with people that are obese or that have problems so that they're motivated to make change?
Well, the first thing I do is try to link up cause and effect for them.
Mm-hmm.
All of what I do with people is gearing them towards what is optimum for them individually.
Mm-hmm.
I will have them observe certain things. All of this is in an attempt to have them find out what it is they're eating or exposing themselves to. And it can be something in the air. It can be emotional. I had a woman once, I had to work with her on her reaction to one of her adult children. And that resolved symptoms in her. But you can look for symptoms like sneezing, coughing, unreasonable crankiness.
Mm-hmm.
Just observation. Did the top of your ears get red? Did mm-hmm. you get really fidgety? That's one thing you can just see in the people around you even. When you ate those foods, how do you feel? You know, go ahead, go to your favorite fast food place.
Mm-hmm.
Observe how you feel after you're done eating that. How do you do over the next few hours? You look for symptoms. That's one of the first things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I have them do, if they're clients, these are my students, I have them look mm-hmm. for symptoms because mm-hmm. there's too many of them to work with them individually. With the individual people, I do teach them the pulse test, which is basically, if there's a food in question, you try that one food. So you take your pulse at the first time on an empty stomach, take your pulse, eat the food. Don't do anything that would be an arbitrary on the pulse. Just sit there. 20 minutes later, take your pulse again, and if it's 10 to 15 beats higher, you're reacting to that food. I do muscle testing, kinesiology muscle testing, to determine just basically it's an arm test. Get a strong reaction on the person's name, then you have them hold the food in question or think about eating it and see if it then weakens the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of things that you can do. Basically, though, I do try to hook up the idea of cause and effect
mm-hmm.
as far as your health and your body's condition goes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that makes sense. A last question, Jean, is there seems to be a debate in the medical community about the pros and cons of drinking distilled water on an ongoing basis. What are your views about this?
Distilled water, therapeutically, can be very good if you're detoxing, especially for people who have got multiple chemical sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
I have had experience with a couple of people who absolutely could not have anything in their water at all, or they would cripple up. Their joints would become so achy they could barely walk. That said, I think for people who are doing pretty well in life, who are fairly healthy and just want to improve,
mm-hmm.
I would suggest if you're going to do distilled water, you need to replace it with minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Just put the minerals back in because you do need minerals. And over time, it does have the capacity to pull all minerals out of your body, not just the ones that are neurotoxic.
Mm.
So, boy, water is a huge issue, especially in this country, because a lot of it is fluoridated, and fluoridation is toxic waste put into the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's mass medication. I don't think there's any conspiracy,
right.
aside from financial, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So people do need to clean up their water supply, but they do need to also replace in the water the minerals that have been taken out as it was purified.
Mm-hmm.
Whole house filtration systems, reverse osmosis. They do have a little bit of a downside. There's some salt in it. Unless you're salt sensitive, that really shouldn't be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But you do need to make sure your diet's good. You have plenty of potassium to keep the sodium-potassium balance. That needs to
mm-hmm.
be good in everybody's cells. And you need to do things like there's a product called Concentrace that you can take. There's a variety of different minerals out there, mineral drops that you can put in the water
mm-hmm.
to remineralize it because you do need your minerals.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been very interesting, Jean, and I wondered if you could tell the listeners about the services that you have to offer and how they could reach you.
Well, the services I offer are basically, if they're in the Western New York area
uh-huh.
and see me personally,
mm-hmm.
I use iridology as an assessment tool along with a very big intake question, not big, but
mm-hmm.
intake interview. And I do use energy psychology. I treat things energetically as well as physically. So to that extent, we're handling the spiritual, emotional aspects of whatever is going on with person. And as I said, I work out nutritionally what is right exactly for that person. There is no one-size-fits-all diet, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you have to work with the changes in the person. So that's what I do. My contact information is 716-633-4794. And my email, currently I use Gmail, I check that more often than anything, is franklin.jean@gmail.com.
Jean, do you do any work over the phone?
Currently I don't. I am, I've been encouraged the last couple of years to do that by a few people. So it's not out of the question. I might start if someone wants to be the first.
You mentioned that you're in Western New York, but well, the phone makes you accessible around the country.
Yes, I know, and it would be a wise thing for me to start that this year.
Yeah. So you would be open to someone contacting you?
Yes, I would. I would. I would just, I have a friend of mine who does that sort of thing. She works internationally, and I think she just gets a credit card number or something. So I would just work it out that way.
So would you give us your phone number again?
716-633-4794.
Great. I've enjoyed talking with you, Jean, and I wish you much continued success in your practice and your education.
Okay. Thanks, Carl. It was fun.
Great. Thank you. I thank you for joining me on the Holistic Health Show this evening. On my next show, I will interview four women who have beat breast cancer using different complementary approaches. I will look for you then. I am Dr. Carlo Helvey, your host, wishing you a good evening.